Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
Well, thank you for joining us today for the latest Pediatric Insight brought to you by the Child Health Advisory Council and Career Physicians. My name is Craig Hellemeyer, and our topic today is pathways to successful communication as a leader. The council members in attendance today, Bruder Stapleton, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Bob Sawin, and Arnie Strauss. We also have John Hayes and Wesley Milliken from Career Physicians. So I think that communication is one of the most exciting things that we have as a leader. Certainly, communication by itself will not make you a successful leader, but the inability to communicate successfully can almost certainly make sure that you're not a very successful leader, certainly not as successful as you might otherwise be. The ability as a leader to engage people in your vision, to help them understand the roles and responsibilities that they're going to play and how their performance is going to ultimately be evaluated is one of the most crucial things that we can do as leaders. And whether you're as a leader of a division, a department, a medical school, a health system, it really is important to be able to do those things. So today, we're going to talk about some of the ways that you can make sure that you are as successful as you can be as a leader by improving your communication. The first area that we're going to be talking about are ways that communication, how it is so important, and ways that we can try to improve that communication. And Bruder, I know you've been a leader for a long time and a very successful one. I'd be really interested to hear some of the things that you've found is so important to you as a leader in terms of communicating.
You know, we, especially in large departments, people want to be known. They want to feel that they're valued, and a leader needs to have trust with the people in whatever group they're leading. And communication is one of the most important ways that one develops trust. Having communication that's clear, that can be counted on, and gives people the sense that they know what their expectations are, what the goals of the organization are, and there's some stability that they can rely on. So to me, communication was trying to be clear, to be thoughtful in your communications, making it as personal. Prior to the pandemic, you could bump into people in the hallways, you could go to their offices. And that was one of the things that I tried to do, was to regularly visit members of the faculty's personal offices and to go where they live so that they knew that I understood their daily confines. And it was often, especially if it was a difficult conversation, it was easier for them to discuss some challenges and things if they were in their own environment in a private way. So anyway, I think communication, to make a point, is a way of developing trust. And poor communication that isn't reliable, is not carried through in the future, is a great way to eliminate trust with the people that you need and you are counting on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bruder. I think trust is a really essential component, and certainly great communication can help build that trust. Valerie, you've had lots of opportunities to communicate as a leader. What are some of the things that you found important?
Well, I love all the comments that Bruder's made, and trust is clearly critical to a leader's ability to do anything. If your faculty and staff don't trust you, I would add, if they don't find that you're honest, approachable, these are all characteristics that, you know, you must have as a leader. You know, we often, when we think of the word communication, we think about how you talk, but it's just not, that's not all that's communication. It's how you listen. It's how you try to understand and gain information that then you can use towards your effective communication style. It's how you sit in a room. It's how you make eye contact. It's how you engage individuals in communicating with you that are as important as the words that you choose. And I guess that it's all of those components that I think contribute to your earnest efforts to gain trust with your faculty and staff, and also for you to have the strength to be open and honest and clear and concise, and that there's not misinformation that you're generating because of how you fail to show interest or you fail to make eye contact and so on and so forth. So I think some of those components are really critical. And I guess the other point I would make is that there's never too much communication and interaction that a leader can give. Never too much. It's only too much if it's all about you and it's all your perspectives and it's all about you telling people what you've done as opposed to you trying to seek out the information that you need in order to help everyone that relies so heavily on you to do their jobs and be successful. I would add that too, that it's not just how you do it, it's how much you do it and how available you are as a leader.
Those are really great points, Valerie. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bruce, did you have some comments you wanted to make?
I do. And I would emphasize, it's not just communication style, but often communication preferences. We have some people that prefer picking up a phone. Some prefer meeting face-to-face in certain circumstances. Sometimes email is a preferred way of communication to have a written information in front of you. And I find that many of our junior faculty like texting, and being adaptable and understanding people's communication preferences may help you to be a better communicator with them.
Thank you, Bruce. Arnie, did you have something you wanted to add?
A couple of things. I want to emphasize what Valerie said, that perhaps the most important part of communication is listening well and making sure that the person with whom or people with whom you're talking know that you've listened to them by restating or somehow communicating what their issues are. Second thing I would emphasize is openness. So one of the keys for me was to make sure that everyone knew that my door was always open and that they could just walk in if they really had an important issue. That sounds very difficult when you have a large faculty, as we did here in Cincinnati. But in fact, it makes people think about what they're going to do and make sure that what they're going to have to say if they're going to come to your office is important. And so it was not an issue of being too busy, but it was very inviting and made the faculty members feel that you had wanted to know them and had their interest at heart. Third point I would make is confidentiality. When people talk to you, you have to retain that information and not communicate issues that they don't want you to. And you have to understand what they want to communicate to others and what they don't want to communicate to others. So confidentiality is the third point that I would make about communication. Openness, listening, and confidentiality.
Those are really good points. Wes, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, Craig, not to hijack your conversation, but being the consultant on the call, I would be curious, specific to communication, just the thought this group would have on communication between a chair and their business administrator and communication between a chair and their hospital counterpart, and any wisdom or advice the group might have on that as well.
Well, one of the things that I have found is a way to foster better communication, and it can be between people that you report to or people that are reporting to you, and probably as a chair or division chief, maybe the people that are reporting to you, is to actually use a 360 to understand what they feel about the communication that you've had. Now, 360s can be tricky because it's pretty confidential information. If you actually do it on a routine basis, I would do it every couple of years with the faculty and have them fill out a form, a 360, and then have the information really only viewed by myself. And then what I would do at a faculty meeting is spend a half hour and sort of go over the main points that I got from that and how I planned to communicate better in the future. And that's something that I found helpful. I've also seen situations where 360s weren't quite as beneficial and quite as helpful, but I do think that there is a place for them in terms of becoming a better leader and a better communicator. Valerie, did you have something you wanted to add?
I think, you know, the question, Wes, you're posing is your relationship with your business administration, your chief administrator. I think very much that relationship is critical, just as critical as your relationship with each of your division chiefs. It has to be a clear partnership. Oftentimes, if you move into a new division director's job or a new chair's job, you move in with an administrator already in place who's worked for another leader who has a different, potentially different communication style. So I think one of the most important things that you have to establish early on in that scenario is what you believe will work for you, and try to understand and listen to how they like to work and how they've been used to working. And if there's a disjoint, and you need to make that disjoint go away because of your leadership style, then you need to have clarity on that. So for an example, if you're the kind of leader who likes your administrator to handle the difficult conversations for you, and that's what they're used to doing, and they're good at it, and they're effective at it, and that's what you'd like, then that's fine. But if you're an individual who doesn't feel you want to delegate those difficult conversations, because for your leadership style, in fact, that's part of your way of building trust and honesty with your faculty and staff, and you would prefer to do those difficult conversations yourself. If you don't have understanding of that, as an example, and there's a disjoint, you invariably have major problems. And they can be very difficult to unravel if the individual in the latter scenario goes off and thinks they can handle something that you would prefer that they hadn't have handled, and they do it in a manner in which you wouldn't have done it, then you've got a lot of issues. So I think first and foremost, it's establishing the relationship, how you like to work, how you like to communicate, what you like to delegate, what that partnership's going to look like. And then, as Craig says, constant ways of getting feedback, whether it's through 360s or whether it's whatever mechanism you use, to make sure that that partnership is well aligned. Because when it's not well aligned, you have a lot of difficulties and your leadership can be unnecessarily undermined. And that, you know, obviously can be devastating.
I really like, Valerie, what you talked about in terms of clarifying the issues. And I think that really is something that's important, not only in people who report to you, but also in people that you report to. If you're the division chief, it may be the chair. If you're the chair, it may be the dean. If you're the dean or the CEO of the health system, it may be the board. But understanding and bringing some clarity to areas where you may not see exactly eye to eye is one of the best ways to go about making sure that you can deal with what potentially can turn into a very ugly situation. But understanding that people might have different viewpoints and different ways of going about certain things, and trying to bring clarity to that can sometimes be very helpful, because otherwise you're going to end up with a situation in which you may end up very uncomfortable or even losing your position if you can't bring that about. Do we have any other examples from the team on examples of failed communication that they've had in the past, or ways that they've seen to improve communication? Bob?
I don't know if this is a reflection of my own inadequacies or evolution, but one of the things I noticed earlier in my career was that I had to fight this tendency, if someone came to me with a problem, to try to solve the problem as opposed to helping them solve the problem. And that's something that I stress with, you know, I do some coaching for physician leaders, and I try to stress some of the topics that have already been brought up about listening. But that includes asking questions and asking the person who's in your office what they've done, what they've tried, what's worked. You run the risk if you become the receiver of people's problems and try to solve them all, you run the risk of actually disempowering people in your department, particularly for leaders in your department. You want them to become successful themselves. So in that regard, it's almost like coaching as a leader. And I think that that's particularly, I think it's more true now than ever before, perhaps because of generational changes. Leadership used to be much more hierarchical than I think it is now.
Thank you, Bob. I think that's a really good point. One of the things that I always have enjoyed when I was a leader in pediatrics is helping other people become better leaders, and helping them learn how to be better communicators is one of those things which is pretty exciting. Does anyone have any particular stories they might have about that, helping other people become better communicators? Ruder.
I had an individual who really, and this is more of a clinical setting, who was shy and was making the transition from fellow to an attending in a critical care area. And I was getting messages from the staff and from other that he was an ineffective leader of rounds, and tried to understand what some of the issues were and talked to him. But then I suggested that he go to the Toastmasters Club to learn how to speak in a group. And he did, and he got better because of it. So that was one example of how I helped coach a young person who just really was shy and had, anxious about talking in front of a group of other dominant voices.
That's a really interesting story. That's very good. So I think that in our discussion today, it's been really interesting. And some of the major points that came across to me is that communication is really an opportunity and to really develop trust with your faculty and with those who work around you. And it's something we should really pay attention to. And that perhaps one of the most important parts of learning how to be a better communicator is learning how to be a good listener. And that's a difficult skill. And there are lots of ways to learn that. And like I mentioned, one of the ways that people can do that is through 360s. I want to thank all of the council for their participation today. And if you want to look at further topics that the Pediatric Insights have talked about, at careerphysician.com, and then Pediatric Insights will give a list of those other topics that we've been able to have discussions that you may well find interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. Our council members include the following physicians: Bruder Stapleton, Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocque Arena, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sawin, and Arnold Strauss. To view our council members' bios, please visit careerphysician.com and click on the Child Health Advisory Leadership tab.